Hello and welcome to another edition of the Scarlet Nation podcast on the 24/7 Sports Network. I'm Chris Iconis, joined by Bobby Darin, as the Rutgers Scarlet Knights are now 2-0 to start the season. Back-to-back wins at home, first against Northwestern and now last Saturday against Temple. Strong defensive showing in both of those games. And now, Bobby, a really big game coming up against an old Big East opponent in Virginia Tech, with a chance for the Scarlet Knights to go to 3-0 on the season. Hard to overstate how important this game is.
Yeah, you know, Chris, we're talking, you know, every game in the early part of the season is really a must-win game because, the schedule gets significantly tougher as the year goes on. And you're looking at a Virginia Tech team that it is not like the daunting Virginia Tech teams of the past. This is a team that Rutgers is favored against, Chris, and it's a game they should really win. I hate to say should, but it's a game that's very well within their grasp, and a game that many expect, many fans, pundits, and people across the country now expect them to win. It's definitely a third straight home game. Definitely going to be a good atmosphere, and things are starting to look up for Rutgers football, Chris.
Yeah, definitely. Not just in terms of how Rutgers has played in terms of their defense, also seeing some promising signs on the offensive side. Run game seems to be clicking. You've seen a lot of signs of progress from Gavin Wimsett. And overall, just looks like things are trending in the right direction. But I think you raised an interesting point about Virginia Tech. This is a Virginia Tech team coming into this one 1-1, took care of business in the opener against Old Dominion. But then a 24-17 loss to Purdue at home in front of a dwindling home crowd, because there was a 5.5 hour, give or take a few minutes, a 5.5 hour weather-related delay.
Mm-hmm.
And then to go and lose to a team that's not considered to be among the Big Ten elite in Purdue, that in and of itself raises questions. But then you look at the injury report for Virginia Tech. And this is a team that's going to be coming in banged up. Already lost a top receiver, Ollie Jennings, who came in the transfer portal. He's been ruled out. Tight end Nick Gallo also ruled out. And several other players questionable. Most notably, the quarterback for Virginia Tech, Grant Wells, who has come in and had a bit of an up and down start to the season. But if he's not ready to go, you've got to go to your backup if you're Virginia Tech. And that certainly would raise questions. So all in all, Virginia Tech looks to be a bit banged up and haven't looked all that impressive in the games they've played so far. So an opportunity for Rutgers to maybe catch them at a relatively fortuitous time from Rutgers' perspective.
Yeah, you know, and first of all, in this day and age, to have a 5-hour weather delay is unheard of. I mean, we have better technology from our weather guy on the board, and I don't know why they didn't delay that game till later. But I mean, I think every little thing can work in Rutgers' advantage at this point. You know, that weather delay, the game played a little later, who knows, did it impact them? But Virginia Tech beat an Old Dominion team, not a great Old Dominion team. So this is a team that's definitely beatable. And those injuries, when you talk about, you know, these teams, and we say this every year, Chris, even in Rutgers, you know, how far can this team go? Well, how far can they go without getting any real bad injuries? And you're already seeing Virginia Tech with their top receiver, Ollie Jennings, being down. Like, they don't necessarily have a guy that can slide right in and be that same player. And that's what you see in some of these teams. You know, they'll start out strong and then they'll fizzle because the depth just isn't there. Rutgers is steadily building that depth. We're going to really see how well Tech is stacked at receiver. And Rutgers' corners have been playing really well. Robert Longerbeam and Max Melton have been really good so far to start the season. So they're going to give these guys fits. And that injury, I think, is going to be a big deal in how that offense operates on Saturday.
Yeah, it definitely is. And because if you look at this as a Virginia Tech team that is only in year two under their new head coach, Brent Pry, someone who is trying to really build that program up, not, you know, the Virginia Tech that has usually been, you know, one of the better teams in the country, and the team that Rutgers used to have a lot of problems with back in the day, you know, before Greg Schiano really started to build things up in the Big East. And I looking at the weapons, I don't think they have a ton of weapons healthy at their disposal. I also just think, you know, it's one thing to be down a couple wide receivers, and that's bad enough. It's another thing to be down a couple wide receivers and then have to throw at your remaining receivers in the direction of Max Melton and Robert Longerbeam and Flip Dixon, who had himself really quite a game against Temple. And you know, I could go on. But I do think the matchup of Rutgers defense against Virginia Tech's offense is certainly one that seems, at least on paper, to favor the Scarlet Knights. And I think another big question in this one is just what will the offense show? It was a bit of the same against Temple that you saw against Northwestern. Rutgers starts off a bit strong. There was an unfortunate fumble on the first drive, but Rutgers was able to go up 13-0 and then, you know, gets a little bit closer. And then, you know, after that one Temple touchdown, the doors just get completely blown off and Rutgers wins that one running away. So I think looking at this game now, I think the question is, can Rutgers offense continue those hot starts, and how will Gavin Wimsett fare against a team that is almost certainly, despite their issues, going to be a step up from the first two teams they've played?
They will, but you know, Virginia Tech, I'm looking at it right now, Chris, 79th in the country in total defense, give up 361 yards a game. You know, I think Wimsett has played really well. And they've kind of lulled him to sleep a little bit with the play calling. You know, he's been on early, and then all of a sudden it was like, run the ball, let's play safe. I'd like to see them open it up. And then they will open it up sooner or later. They're going to have to. You know, you're not playing Northwestern and Temple all season. So I think you'll start to see more out of it. And you know, coaches are a unique breed. They're conservative of what they're going to show. I mean, everybody's always paranoid about something getting out. They can't see this play or whatnot. So sooner or later, right? Rutgers is just going to have to start it opening the floodgates and let it fly. And, you know, this could be the week, but if they can rely on that run, Chris, they're going to. They're going to keep, you know, pounding the rock, running up the middle. You got running backs. I mean, you got Sam Brown back. You have Kyle Manungai playing well. You have Jayshon Benjamin playing well. You have Aaron Young, who had a great spring, great summer. Unfortunately, he was hurt in the latter part of that final first week of practice before the Northwestern game. So he's going to be back sooner or later. You saw Al-Shadi Salam coming back from injury, and he's been playing well. So if they can run the ball effectively, you know, they will. And let's not forget, Gavin Wimsett is a dangerous runner as well. But you know, to me, he's one of my early standouts on offense, because while he's not been, you know, Heisman candidate, you know, stuff, he's been effective. And I think some people might nitpick what he's done, Chris, but look at the body of work that you have from the previous quarterbacks. You know, he's really played much better than what Rutgers fans have seen in the past. So I think that should be recognized, and you see his growth and maturity. And does he make every throw? No. Is he going to progress and get better? Most likely. But he's doing what they need to do to win the football game. And he doesn't have a turnover in 50 pass attempts this year, which I think speaks volumes. So he's one of the early standouts to me on the offensive side of the ball. Who would you pick, you know, on that side early on, Chris, is your offensive standout through two games?
My offensive standout is going to have to be Kyle Manungai. I mean, you just look at what he has done. He really showed out a career high 165 yards against Temple in that win, really showed off some big runs, particularly on that drive that Rutgers ended up going up 19-7 on. That's when you really started to see him kick it into another gear, and it looked like he was getting stronger as the game went on. Part of that also was Temple's defense getting worn out. But still, you have to have an effective, consistent rusher to get those runs in. And I think Kyle Manungai has been a guy that is going to have a role down the stretch, even when everyone is healthy. He's going to be a big part of that Rutgers running game. And I think you saw that. And you think you saw what he was capable of against Temple. And I think so far through two games, I had to pick him. Other players have shown flashes, like Jaquay Jackson had a really good game against Temple, but he didn't see the field a ton against Northwestern. Of course, that wasn't his fault. He took a big hit on the first play that he saw. But, you know, he's a guy that I think could also be good. Jayshon Benjamin has shown some really good flashes. Didn't quite throw up the yardage that Manungai did. And, you know, there are some guys, and also Ian Strong, too, with two good catches against Northwestern. So there are a few guys that have stood out early, but offensively, I got to go with Kyle Manungai. Bobby, I got to ask, what's your defensive early standout for Rutgers?
You know, there's been a lot of solid play across the board. And one guy who I've been, you know, hyping up and saying that, you know, he's a real high ceiling is Shaquan Moyle. And he steps into a role that Christian Isian played last year, and he played really well, really effective. And I think you're seeing Moyle, you know, stepping up into that role and really filling his shoes. The one thing I notice about him, he gets to the other side of the field really quickly, takes good angles. He's fast. He brings, he lowers the boom when he hits. You saw him get another interception last week. This is a former four-star kid, one of the top five kids ranked in the state in his respective recruiting class. So he has a super high ceiling, and he came in as a corner, and he's playing more of that star position, which is a combination safety corner. Even with some, you know, he plays closer to the line of scrimmage at some points, but you can move him around. This guy can do a lot of different things. And while Isian was good, this is a bigger version of him. And, you know, it's already his third year, went by very quickly. But I think this is a kid who has a huge ceiling, and you're just starting to see him, you know, scratch the surface of that potential by the season's end. I think this kid could be, you know, an all Big Ten player. Now, that doesn't discount the contributions from all around. You mentioned Flip Dixon. You know, I thought Desmond Igbinosun's playing well. You know, a lot of different players doing well, but he was a guy I would signal out as my early standout on the defense. And what would your selection be, Chris?
For me, it's going to have to be Mo Ture. This is a player who is coming back from not playing at all last year and has really just been able to do a little bit of everything. You know, hybrid linebacker, has played a bit at the edge rush spot as well. You look at what he's done statistically, 13 total tackles, already has a sack and a pass deflection, has really been able to contribute wherever Rutgers has needed him to. And that's was one of the big questions was what would Mohamed Ture look like coming back from injury and from the early returns. And he's playing alongside a deep defensive line when he's there. And also the linebacker room brings back a lot of experience. You know, he's been a guy that has been able to get it done and really looks like he hasn't missed a beat. If anything, he looks even better. I think that has been huge for Rutgers just to have that kind of versatile weapon. It creates a lot of mismatches and it creates some more dangerous situations for opposing offenses.
Yeah, and, you know, I spoke with Mo after Tuesday's practice, and you know, he's excited to play linebackers. He hasn't really played linebacker that much in that role. He was basically a rush end, and he was supposed to do that role last year. Excuse me. And he, you know, is finally back and healthy. He looks to me faster than ever. He's a really, I mean, I was really impressed with the way he played against Temple. So good choice there. And, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't select an early standout on special teams. Greg Schiano harps on it so much. He has a hand, a very instrumental hand in coaching the special teams. That's kind of his baby. My special team standout early would be Flynn Appleby, only because, you know, I didn't expect him to do as well as he has early on. You know, he's down in the ball. I mean, look, he doesn't have the best average in all of Power 5 and FBS, but you know, nobody's returning punts on them. And I think after Adam Korsak, you know, you're not going to get the same thing. But he's been pretty effective in the early going. I've been impressed because I don't think he has as strong a leg, you know, as Korsak. But he's been effective in what they've asked him to do. So that being said, who would your special teams guy be?
For me, it's going to have to be the redshirt freshman kicker, Jay Patel. 4 of 5 on field goals already, 2 beyond 40 yards, including that 51-yarder to open his game against Temple. This is someone who has the range to be a very, very good college kicker and has already shown an ability to make those deep kicks that really open things up. You know, I think we were a little surprised in the press box. I remember us sort of talking a little bit that, you know, they had the faith in him to kick a 51-yard field goal as a freshman. And he showed that he's capable of hitting those kicks. And that does a lot for an offense because now you're in a position where if you're in that sort of tweener territory on the field, you know, you don't necessarily have to punt it and play the field position game. Now you can go and try to score some points in positions where you previously couldn't. So I think that's going to be big for this offense. I think Patel has really handled himself with poise. When you talk to him, you wouldn't know he was a redshirt freshman. He sounds like he's been playing college football for 5 years. And he has shown that in the way he's been kicking, and you know, good fundamental kicking. It may not, you know, be the flashiest thing in the world always, but those points add up, and in close games against tough Big Ten teams, that could be the difference between winning and losing, Bobby.
Yeah, and he's been I was surprised that he won the job, because you know, Jude McAdamy has a stronger leg, but Jay has consistently gotten better and better, and you know, he's more precise than Jude. But Jude is also, we have to acknowledge him. I mean, he's kicked every ball out of the end zone. They don't even need a kickoff coverage team. You and I could run down there and it'd have the same effect, you know. So I don't know if we make it all the way down the field, but they don't need a kickoff coverage team anymore. Jude just kicks it out of the end zone. So, you know, he's another one we should really acknowledge as well. But, you know, Chris, I also think you should take time to point out the home field advantage that Rutgers has created through the first two games. I mean, they've combined for two wins in a score that's 60 to 14, and they haven't tried to pour it on them. You know, I think if they really opened things up, they could have gotten 90 against those teams. But you know, it's been a good atmosphere, and this, that could really help them on Saturday. You finally have a 3:30 game. It's not a night game. It's not a you know, early game. It's right in the middle of that Saturday. Students are back on campus. Greg Schiano talked about the importance of that. Student section was filled when the guys came out to warm up the other night. So that's something you haven't seen a lot, and it's really helping them, and it's creating a good environment. And Rutgers finally, you know, 1-13 coming into this season against Big Ten teams at home. Status at home, that's something that needed to change. 1-13 against under Schiano, I should say, since he took over. But that's something that needed to change, and it looks like it has.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the student section, I think, is indicative of just sort of the mood on campus. When Greg Schiano came back, Rutgers football had been in a place where, you know, because the team had struggled for years since he had left, the enthusiasm, and I can say this firsthand as a student who was on campus towards the tail end of that, the enthusiasm had really dipped. It just, Rutgers football wasn't really an event in the way that it usually is. So to see the student section as it has been just absolutely packed, I think that section filled up before, you know, most of the other fans even got into the stadium, if I'm being honest, just looking at it from the press box. You know, I think the enthusiasm there has been great. I think, you know, you've got the student body excited about Rutgers football. And I think the rest of the fans, and they haven't been bad crowds by any means, but I think the rest of the fans will follow as Rutgers continues to show signs of progress. You know, I look back to, and I know they're two very different sports, you know, what Steve Peichel did with basketball. If you look at the attendance, even when, you know, the really keyed in Rutgers fans knew that Steve Peichel was building something, the attendance didn't really, really sell out night in and night out until they were in the middle of that season where they would have made the NCAA tournament if not for COVID-19. So I think you could see a similar trajectory as Rutgers continues to demonstrate on the field against better and better teams. Rutgers would hope are able to demonstrate on the field that they are a better program and that they're on that right trajectory. I think you're going to see the fan base buy in even more, and that's going to make SHI Stadium an even more imposing environment moving forward.
You know, during the COVID season, you mentioned that there was 150 allowed into the basketball game. So I think the media was basically just me, Chris Eisman, and Brian Fonseca. And it was eerie watching the games. They had the cardboard cutouts. So I'm glad.
I was calling those games, Bobby. I was stuck over on the
Oh, you were on the other side?
I was on the other side. I was by the cardboard cutout students that were lined up in there.
And, so you were one of the 150. I didn't even realize that. My bad.
Yes, I was. Well, we kind of kept a low profile. Well, I mean, you could argue we were the student section at the time. We were the only students outside of the players that were allowed in the building. So I guess we were the student section that year too. But yeah, those environments were weird. So definitely having those fans back now for a couple of years has been very welcome from our perspective.
It was so strange covering it, because if I look down at my computer to write something, you know, you always hear the crowd. All right, did I miss something? You look up, but there was no crowd. It was like, you know, Luke Nathan or somebody yelling on the bench. So, yeah, glad to see that. But, you know, a couple more things I wanted to touch on. One, you know, this game opened, the Rutgers was the 3.5 to 4 point favorite, and all of a sudden they're 7 point favorites. A big jump in it. And I think it shows, you know, a lot of people are starting to believe, you know, betting on this team. team. I mean, Lions don't usually jump that much. So, a lot of people starting to favor Rutgers there. And I think that's a good thing because, you're coming in and you have this national perceptors of Rutgers being that underdog, the perennial underdog, and, favored in all three games now. It's nice to see.
Yeah, definitely. And I also think, as you see Rutgers play against gradually better opposition, you're going to see the betting lines reflect that. Now, in fairness, I think part of it has to do with the injury news that Virginia Tech has had and some players that are questionable, mm-hmm. including their quarterback, Grant Wells, as we talked about before. But the fact remains, Rutgers has been now favored in all three games, and two of those are against power conference teams in Northwestern and now Virginia Tech. So I do think that it is indicative of improvement, and I'm very curious to see if Rutgers wins this game, where exactly do they put that line against Michigan? Because that's been a bit of an up and down matchup over the last couple of years, a bit more unpredictable than I think a lot of people would have expected them to be the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, I mean, beat Virginia Tech, go into Michigan and be competitive. And that would be something in itself. But, let's not get ahead of ourselves because things are going to get tougher, Chris. And this conference schedule is going to be a lot tougher than what we've seen thus far. So, as good as, as it's been for the fan base to enjoy the success, there's some big boys coming in the wings.
Yeah, and we do our regular FPI update that ESPN has with their metrics, just to sort of give a gauge of where Rutgers stands on the analytics side of things. And the team's made some progress. They've jumped 22 spots up to number 54, number 10 in the Big Ten. Started the season at the bottom, and has slowly worked its way up. But you look at the schedule and you look at the rankings. Rutgers plays the top ranked seven teams in the Big Ten are all on the schedule. Two of the top three, Michigan and Penn State, are on the road. It's not an easy schedule. There are some teams in the Big Ten that are having down years, but other than Indiana, Rutgers really doesn't play them. So that is another factor which makes this game all the more important because you need to get every win you can. But it also shows that this team is going to have to carry that improvement over down the stretch because the schedule does not do them any favors on the back half.
Yeah, and that's why it's also important to build this momentum and confidence in these first three games, because momentum's a funny thing in college sports. You get a team start believing in themselves. Now they're going to have talent, obviously, but you get a team believing in themselves and they play better than expected. And I think staying healthy is also a key. I mean, you saw injury to Ty Needham last week. Didn't look good. Greg didn't give an update on whether he would be available, but it did not sound promising. The injury did not look promising. You might have a guy like Kamar Mazzouri coming in and playing right tackle. But if these injuries start to hit, that's another thing to keep an eye on, because does Rutgers have the depth to compensate for significant losses on the injury front? So far, so good. But that's something we're also going to monitor as this season progresses, and not just monitor, but consider when we're analyzing, how this team's going to fare. And certain positions are not that deep, so you can't afford a loss, at certain spots. So, every year, Chris, you need some breaks, to come out on top. And so the ball has to bounce your way. Some years the injury bug bites worse than others. If it doesn't bite as much this year, could be more favorable. I mean, you look at October 14th now, the homecoming game, Michigan State's a team in disarray. I mean, does that work in the Rutgers' favor a little bit more? Who knows? I mean, this week, Virginia Tech's playing with some key injuries. Is it the right time for Rutgers to play them and capitalize on it? Every season you need a little good luck, and Rutgers has had some bad luck, as we've all seen. So maybe this is the year the luck turns for the better. So, that being said, it could turn into a promising year, but we have to keep an eye on those breaks and those intangibles as well.
Definitely, and those breaks could go both ways. They haven't gone Rutgers' way in the past, but it's an encouraging start, 2-0 on the season, so we'll have to see how that shapes up. Rutgers taking on Virginia Tech on Saturday afternoon, 3:30, and if you're not at SHI Stadium, I think you're going to be missing out on a big crowd. Of course, there are some holiday obligations, and so some people can't make it out, but I do think, based on the excitement we're seeing on the boards, Bobby, it's going to be a lot of excitement as fans are starting to believe in this team.
Yeah, and you know, rightfully so. 60-14 combined score in the first two games, and you know, you want to put fans in the seats, win some games, and that's what's happened, Chris.
Definitely. So on that note, that's going to do it for us here on the Scarlet Nation podcast. As a reminder, you can get all the latest Rutgers football and basketball news right here at scarletnation.com. You can also hop on the message boards and chat with myself, Bobby Darin, Brian Doan, everyone else at our 24/7 staff will be there to give you some updates and answer your latest questions. We're here for you, so come and be with us. That does it here at the Scarlet Nation podcast on the 24/7 Sports Network.